Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 6 of the Adventures in Brain Injury podcast. Today we're going to be speaking with Amy Zellmer. In February of 2014, Amy suffered a severe concussion and has since become a force for the promotion of brain injury awareness as a contributor to the Huffington Post and as a recently published author. My name is Alec Hess, and with me is severe traumatic brain injury survivor and founder of AdventuresInBrainInjury.com, Mr. Kavin Ballister. How you doing today, Kavin?
I'm doing pretty good, Al. How you doing?
I'm all right, man. Thanks. For some reason, the winter's here, and that's allergy season for me, so I'm putting up with it today, but we'll get through it. We'll survive this. I'm confident that the congested voice won't be too bad, but... So I know you've been really busy working on something. You got a trip coming up. So tell me about that.
So the trip coming up, I am going to the International Symposium on Clinical Neuroscience.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, in Orlando, Florida. And that's going to be really cool. The keynote speaker is Olympic hopeful Kevin Pierce,
cool.
who runs Love Your Brain.
Right.
And did the Love Your Brain yoga program, which I was featured in a news
KVUE Austin interview. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. It's run by the Carrick Institute, and the Carrick Institute, my functional neurologist was a student of Dr. Ted Carrick. And Ted Carrick is kind of considered the father of functional neurology.
Oh, cool.
And as you know, I'm a big fan of functional neurology.
Right.
And use of vestibular therapy to stimulate the cranial nerves to affect the eye and balance and
right.
all sorts of things that are tied into neurorehabilitation.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to go. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear about it.
So I've been working on putting together a concise and digestible ebook about my story, so that readers can just easily get an idea of who I am and what it is I'm doing. It's got a lot of great pictures in there, and I also include an FAQ section.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a great ebook. I had a lot of fun collaborating with you on it. I think it, like you said, it really does serve a purpose to tell your story to people in a really concise way. It's hard to kind of browse through an entire blog and get the essence of what somebody's gone through and what they recommend and what they're doing. But anybody on our email list should be able to get that automatically, or if you're on the Patreon page. And if you want to get it, come on by the website, adventuresinbraininjury.com, and you can check it out yourself. Let's jump into this interview we did with Amy Zellmer. It was a great interview. I mean, we just had so much fun with her, and we could have gone for days talking.
We really could have. Amy is amazing, and what she's doing, just spreading awareness, and it's so timely. That we're really understanding that a concussion is a type of brain injury. It's a brain injury,
right.
You know, especially if you lose consciousness. And this is all coming really clear, you know, walk it off is not the case
right.
at all.
Right.
And I really appreciate the work she's doing. And the exposure that she's getting to bring out into the world.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. And I'm excited to bring her in here. So let's do it.
Great. Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. So we're really excited to have on the show with us today Amy Zellmer, who is a contributor to the Huffington Post, a photographer, business coach, dog owner, and of course, a traumatic brain injury survivor herself. Amy, thanks so much for being on the show with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to do this with you guys.
Yeah, very excited to have you here.
This is great. We've tried to make this happen for the last couple of months, and we finally were able to. And I'm really glad that you're here this time for the holiday seasons. Because there's just so much to talk about. And you just did a new article on Huffington Post, which I want to talk about too. Life with a TBI, 6 tips for surviving the holidays and overstimulation. So I'm excited to talk about that.
Yeah, great.
So to start, do you mind just telling us about what happened and just tell us a little bit about your injury and everything that happened after that.
Well, like you said, it was February 2014, and I was just walking down our driveway, which is a slight incline. It's kind of a bit of a hill. And I had Pixie in my arm, my little Yorkie. And, I mean, I had no warning. It was just, phoomp, feet went out from under me, and I landed smack on the back of my head. And I just remember thinking, oh, this is bad. Like, cause I mean, I knew I landed on my head. And when I got up, I was kind of seeing stars and my head just hurt. And, I was like, Pixie, we need to get in the house. Like, I couldn't even reach down to pick her up. It just hurts so bad. So I kind of like drug her leash and just kind of drug, cause she was confused. She didn't know what happened. You know, she was kind of freaked out too. And I went to the doctor and they're like, yep, you have a pretty good concussion. You did a good number. And obviously like I had whiplash and torn muscles and all this other crap that goes with it. So right. Yeah, it's been an interesting ride. Yeah. And, you know, I'd say probably 6 to 8 months into it, I actually kind of started getting worse. Like the dizziness got worse, the brain fog got really bad, I was getting more headaches, and that really kind of freaked me out a little bit, like, why am I getting worse?
Right.
And then it was about 16 months in when I finally kind of turned a corner, and and now I feel like I'm on the downswing, but I mean, I'm still not fully recovered, but I feel better.
Yeah, I often talk about how I don't think we ever fully recover from traumatic events like this. Like, we learn how to adapt and how to manage our lives in our new circumstances, you know? When did you say you started getting worse?
Probably like 6 to 8 months in.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess that's common. Well, common. Yeah, I'm using the air quotes, like normal.
I've figured.
But it just everything kind of started amplifying, and you know, and then you get really depressed and you feel really isolated because nobody understands what you're going through, and you know, I lost a lot of friends because they just didn't understand. You know, I mean. In one of my articles, I talk about, you know, if I'd have heard it's just a concussion one more time, I think I would have punched someone in the face.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never had to deal with that, but I can totally imagine. I mean, so many like walk it off, you know?
It's just exactly. Concussion,
you know, and.
Because I was high functioning, you know, I could still talk and walk. I looked okay. You know, you were in the hospital, you had some serious injuries with yours, Kevin, but, you know, I think if I'd have broken my wrist, I think I would have gotten more help than I did from hitting my head.
Something observable, some physical injury.
Exactly. Yeah. People just don't understand invisible stuff. Yeah.
Well, part of what I love about the way you write, and Kevin and I have talked about this too, is that you really have a capability for empathy and sharing the survivor perspective with people who don't really understand that. And I want to ask you more about that when we get to your articles, but I'm more curious too about what happened after your injury. Were you alone when you fell? And
yes.
How did the people around you, how did your family, you know, how did they react? And what's it like today with them on a daily basis?
I was alone. And so we're pretty sure I knocked myself out at least briefly, just because Pixie was probably 10 feet away when I got up. But we don't know for sure how long I was out because I was alone. And I live alone. So, you know, that was kind of a challenge. I'd get upstairs, I'd crawl upstairs to my bedroom and be like, crap, I forgot the ice pack downstairs, you know, and you have no one to help you. And it's just those little things. And I couldn't use my microwave or my oven, but like I couldn't even figure out how to use my microwave for a few weeks. Like, wow. It just confused me.
Scary feeling, probably.
It's really scary. Really, really, really scary. And when you have no one to help you. I shouldn't have been driving, probably, but I did. I didn't have a choice. How was I going to get anywhere? My parents are older. They're in their late 70s. And, you know, they've been supportive and they've done what they can. But, you know, they live about a half hour away from me. And, you know, they've done what they can to help. But I've had a few friends really come forward and help me and really be there for me. And that's, I actually met a friend whose mother went through almost an identical thing. She slipped and fell on her head like I did. And she was probably the best thing to happen to me, because when I started having a panic attack, I had no idea what it was. And I thought I was dying or something. Mm-hmm. I thought I was having a heart attack. And she really, she knew what was happening, and she really helped me through it. So I'm really thankful for the handful of friends who did come forward to help. But they still, even now, they don't understand. You know, it's kind of like, God, you know, it's been like almost 2 years, Amy. What's your deal? I was just thinking about that today. As I was on my way home from Starbucks, I was thinking about that, how it's been almost 2 years and I still have a lot of issues. Like the memory stuff's really bad. Like I have to use post-it notes for everything, and
lists.
Yes, lists, yep. Shopping lists.
Huge like, fan I, of lists.
Yep, I cannot go to the store without a list, or it's just like, why am I here?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I was really interested in one of the chapters in your book is about essential oils and how essential oils helped you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty interested in that. I have a friend who does essential oils as well. And I study physiology and biochemistry and nutrition and neurology, and I don't know much about essential oils, but I'd love to hear what helped you.
Yeah. You know, the biggest thing for me, and so, you know, because I had whiplash, I had a dislocated sternum, I had lots of torn muscles, the doctors were much more interested in treating that, at, mm-hmm. you know, in the beginning, like they didn't realize the extent of my head injury. And so peppermint oil and lemongrass oil were really, really effective in helping with pain management for that. And then cedarwood is one that I would diffuse. I hated the smell of it. I hated it. It smelled like cat pee. But, you know, it worked. So I would diffuse it in my diffuser at night. So a diffuser, it's with water, and it's kind of like a humidifier. Okay. And it releases it into the air while you're sleeping.
So you'd have cat pee mist all yes. over the place.
Yes, but now I actually enjoy the smell, so it's kind of funny.
It's funny how that happens.
I've heard that sometimes the ones that you're most, like, repelled by, mm-hmm. like, ugh, those are sometimes the ones you need, so I found that interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Kind of like, I don't know if you've ever heard of pica, but it's when, like, pregnant women or children will eat dirt because they need iron. I think
right,
it's iron.
Right, right, right.
You know, it's kind of similar to that, I guess. But, yes, I'm a big fan of essential oils. And there's a blend called Transformation. And that one, for whatever reason, that one helps me calm down. And, like, if I'm having a panic attack, even just holding the bottle helps me. And then I just kind of smell it and put it on my wrist, and that one really helps relieve my anxiety.
That's great. Super mm-hmm. interesting.
So it is.
You touched just a little bit too on some of the symptoms you have today. You said memory, panic attacks. Yes. Can you go over that list for me one more time, just so I'm clear on what you deal with on a daily basis?
Yes. Definitely short-term memory. I have to do lots of post-it notes. Someone used a really good word, and he called it lack of awareness. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it's not that I'm forgetting to do things. It's like, it doesn't even occur to me that I have to do that. So I need to I need to put a post-it note. Like last night, I got on my phone, I got the little message that if I went to Starbucks today and got a flat white latte, you got a three bonus stars. So I had to write a post-it note, or I would have gone all day today without remembering to go to Starbucks. So it's just, it's really strange how it's just totally gone from my head.
Right.
And I still struggle with, like spatial reasoning. Like I can't put a puzzle together to save my life. I can't figure it out. And the doctors find that one really interesting because I'm a creative, I'm a photographer, and like, that's normally your strongest on testing. And that's coming through as my weakest on testing. Wow. So, they're baffled by that one.
You know, I,
and I walk into things all the time and trip over my own feet.
The lack of awareness piece. I really like that because for me, doing just about anything takes way more attention on my part. You know, like now I need to focus on my balancing, how I take each step, like the nuances of every little motion I'm making. I wrote a post. So it's like lifting my left foot, shifting my right weight to my right foot, bending it, placing it like heel to toe forward. And like, you know, it feels ridiculous explaining those nuances, but that's still just part of what I had to think about.
Yeah.
All while also keeping my balance. And you know, I don't have too much balance also. So the awareness piece feels like, for me, like it's hard for me to be aware of everything else when I need to be aware of what I'm doing. And and at the same time, it also feels like when I tell people, you know, that I have trouble with something, then I'm sort of babied or not given not counted on to handle things, or my abilities seem like even more lessened, if that makes sense. And so it's like a crazy balance of like, yeah, this is difficult, but you know, it's not like I can't do it, you know? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And you know, like you said earlier, we learn how to deal with it. And like developing coping skills, like one of my big coping skills is post-it notes everywhere. I had a friend come over and actually she just kind of giggled at the post-it. I had a post-it note on my toaster. I had a post-it note on my, by my purse. like I'll buy foods and put it in the freezer. Like maybe I bought some frozen chicken breasts and I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a sandwich and a casserole with this chicken. And I literally have to write it down and put it where I'll see it, or I'll completely forget that that chicken's in the freezer and what I bought it for. So, you know, it's just like day-to-day things that we take for granted that we do that just, there's a disconnect now.
Right. Thank you for filling me in, too, about what you deal with on a daily basis. I want to just mention, because we haven't yet, your website is facesoftbi.com. And you said in your about page, our mission is to be a voice for traumatic brain injury and bring awareness to the world. We hope to educate survivors, caregivers, friends and family, as well as the medical community. There's a lot of misunderstanding surrounding TBI and concussions. We want to be the voice of change. I love that. And so you completed a Kickstarter to publish a book. Can you tell us about that book, what it's called, and what readers can expect to get from it?
Yes, it's called Life with a Traumatic Brain Injury, Finding the Road Back to Normal. And I did, it's basically a compilation of a bunch of my Huffington Post pieces, plus some additional more recent blog posts from my own blog. But it came to life through a Kickstarter. I knew that this book needed to get out into hands of survivors, caregivers, medical professionals. And I did a Kickstarter and I was overwhelmed by the amount of support, with the Kickstarter. I had it fully funded within 3 hours. Wow. I was just blown away. And I almost doubled my goal. So now that book is being sent all over the world. I mean, I've sent it to Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Ireland, the UK. I mean, it's just, it's so cool to see it going everywhere.
Yeah, congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you. And it's a compilation of my HuffPost pieces talking about my story, talking about ways that you can help someone going through a TBI. Mm-hmm. You know, it talks about my journey through recovery. You know, it's just, I wanted it to be something that anybody could pick up and get something out of it, whether it's a survivor or a caregiver or a loved one. I've given it to some of the doctors I've worked with, and they've been very enlightened by it to hear a survivor's perspective. Mm. So, because I've had some doctors that have just completely blown me off.
Right.
And, you know, like, you know, you go to a neurologist and you expect them to be able to figure it out. And then they almost make you feel like you're making it up or faking it or something. And it's like, why aren't you helping me?
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's really because they don't understand. They just don't know enough about it. My neurologist cared more about helping my whiplash. I'm like, but wait a minute.
You're a neurologist.
I know. I was so confused. But, you know, it was physical. She knew how to fix it or mm-hmm. help it, you know, where the brain, I think sometimes they don't know what to do. It's... And, you know, we were talking earlier about so I've had a lot of visual problems with my left eye.
Yeah.
Neurologist kind of blew me off. I had gone to my eye doctor just to make sure my vision was okay. And it was. It was still the same. And she sent me to a neuro-ophthalmologist.
Yep, yep.
And he was like, are you seeing double? No.
Right.
Okay, well, you're fine. And I kept getting blown off. And I'm like, something's not right with my eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to my regular eye doctor, who's known me for like 12 years. And she's like, I think you're seeing double. I really do. And I'm like, but I don't see two of you.
Right.
So I didn't think that that's what it was. But it turns out that my left eye, which is my damaged eye, it's my dominant eye. So it was working double time to mm-hmm. help me not see double.
Yeah. Yeah,
But then when I was fatigued, it would get a little bit like I was seeing a shadow kind of. And so now she's got me some glasses that really help. It helps a lot with the eye strain. But I mean, it took a year and a half.
And you're also doing, excuse me, and you're also doing vision therapy, right?
I have not started yet. Okay. She referred me to them, and I'm waiting till after the holidays to start that.
I work with a lot of optometrists. I get a lot of support through the optometry community and vision therapy because vision is just so important to the brain. Like
mm-hmm.
you have 12 cranial nerves,
mm-hmm.
4 of those are dedicated to the visual system. That's
yes.
a third of your cranial nerves.
Yes.
And the relationship between the eye and the brain is just incredible, even with neuroplasticity and how the brain heals itself. Like the visual pathways are very well studied, and it's super interesting. Also, as far as concussions go, there are several visual tests that are beginning to be implemented. One of them is called the King-Devick test. And I love that these things are coming together and we're seeing the influence of it. You know, I have double vision as well. And what you're talking about with one eye working overtime and the other is being suppressed. And it's just, you know, I didn't say I saw double. Like
right.
I kept on being asked about it and yes. I'm like, I don't know.
And that's, you know, there's got to be a better way for the doctors to try and get to the bottom of it. I mean, if you ask someone and they're having double vision, if they're having double vision, but they're not traditionally seeing two of anything, you know, like there's got to be a better way to dive into that from a doctor's perspective.
Right. Yeah, and therapists. Actually, it was my occupational therapist who saw that I was closing an eye a lot while I was doing tasks, like close up hand tasks, you know. And she was like, "Do you see double?" And I'm like, "I don't know." She gave me an eye patch, and I'm like, "That's awesome." Plus, I look like a pirate. This is cool.
Yes. Arg.
Well, I can interject a little bit too. I didn't have a traumatic brain injury, but you know, if you know anything about my story, I had a severe retinal tear in one of my eyes, and I'm legally blind in that eye now. And there's always kind of a growing threat for my healthy eye, which is my left eye. But that has been, it's just a huge adaptation process too. And it's always something that, you know, provides a source of anxiety as well. But yeah. I can relate in a lot of senses to what you're talking about, actually to what both of you have gone through with dealing with doctors and surgeons. It's so difficult to relay what you're going through to somebody very often. And I feel like, you know, practitioner or doctor empathy is something that's not appreciated enough. It's just, it's difficult to really feel like you're cared for when people can't understand you, you know? So I can at least relate in that way. Usually I'm sort of the layman advocate on this show, but I definitely can relate in this sense.
You know, and you brought up a good point, Alec, is so my primary doctor has been a chiropractic neurologist.
Awesome.
And when I first went to him that first day, like an hour after I fell, I mean, I had no pain yet, right? Just my head hurt. The rest of my body didn't hurt. And he's like, "Oh, you tore this, you tore that, you have whiplash, you have that." And I started getting hot and woozy and shaky. And he's like, "You're going to be fine. It's okay. You're going to get through this. We'll get you through this." And those words, like, helped.
Yeah.
You know, if he hadn't said that, I probably would have had anxiety from day one.
Yeah.
So just hearing, you know, "You're going to be okay. We're going to get you through this." That's powerful.
I'm a huge fan of chiropractic neurologists.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm heading to the International Symposium on Clinical Neuroscience that's being run by I want to say it's being run by the Carrick Institute, who Dr. Ted Carrick is kind of the founder of chiropractic neurology. And I'm really excited to go to that because chiropractic neurology changed my life. It really, really focused on actually rehabilitating the brain and the pathways that I'd destroyed.
You know, and when I first fell, I knew I needed to go to the doctor. I knew I wasn't okay. I knew I needed to get looked at. And I knew that I didn't want to go to the emergency room because I probably would just be like, "Oh, you're fine. Go home." And so my good friend, her husband is actually my chiropractic neurologist. And she called me and she's like, "Go see Fred right now. Go.
What's his name?
Get you in." His name's Fred. Dr. Fred.
Dr. Fred. I love it.
Yep. So I'm really thankful that that's where I went first. Cause I knew the emergency room wasn't going to help me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like they're just, when it comes to concussions, they're just so, they need to understand it better in emergency rooms.
Yeah. That makes total sense. You know, something, I can relate a little bit more about the empathy experience. I've seen, a psychotherapist for mood disorder for about a decade who has been actually hoping to get her on the show too. She's been a really great source of stability in my life. And as I was going through my whole process with dealing with vision loss and everything that was happening, this is happened a few years ago now, but it was a really terrifying point for me. And that's kind of one of the more relatable experiences I've had to what you or Kevin has gone through. So I saw a surgeon who was really, really qualified. I mean, just an amazing surgeon. I got so many different opinions, from different surgeons on the actual surgery that happened to my eye, the vitrectomy and all these things. And, you know, what should I do preventatively? Because I just needed more information. And I also just wanted more connection. And but I really liked my surgeon. I really liked going to this person. I still see her. And what made a difference was having my psychotherapist call my surgeon and be the go-between and just say, look, you know, we both see this person and this person doesn't really feel like he's being taken care of as an individual. This is a risky thing. I mean, I don't want to say this is going to work for everybody, but for me, it made a big difference because I think that in my surgeon's case, and you know, I don't fault her for this, she was seeing people who are really, you know, elderly and losing their vision through cataracts and things that are more, quote unquote, right, normal. So she was seeing so many people all the time, constantly, every day, that, you know, it's just easy for her to sort of get into a routine of, okay, you're not really going to understand the information I'm giving you, so I'm just going to see that you're okay, and move on. Whereas I'm feeling like, look, I really am terrified about going blind. I'm having panic attacks. I don't know what's going on. Can you connect with me in some way? So for me, a lesson was that it is possible to reach out to a practitioner or a doctor or a surgeon or somebody who's interfacing with you about what you're going through and say, you know what, like, I would just appreciate a little bit more empathy, just a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit? Can you connect with me a little? Because now I go back to her, and of course it helps that we've known each other for a few years, but she's so much more responsive, and she really asks me about what daily life is like. And if she, and I think that I believe in my soul that has made her a better practitioner, because she can relate to her other patients that way, right, a little bit more, and she's, yeah, more invested in the cases that she's dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, man, you know, sorry, go ahead, Amy.
Oh, I was just going to say, that's, you know, the number one thing I hear from people in my Facebook group is that they feel like their doctors don't listen to them, mm-hmm, and don't understand them. And I just think that, one, I think doctors just don't understand concussions well enough. You know, but
right,
I tell people, you have the right to find a different doctor. You know, if you don't like the doctor you're with and they're not listening to you, you know, first of all, bring an advocate with you. Maybe you're just not hearing them right.
Right.
Because that's very possible for people with TBI. We don't always have our filters in place. So one, bring someone with you to like verify. And then if they also agree with you, find a new doctor. I mean, the doctor works for you, not the other way around. Right.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And that's ultimately the path that I went through too, into getting a bunch of different, interpretations of what I was going through and a lot of other opinions. But I was lucky enough that ultimately I was able to actually, you know, really reconcile a relationship with my surgeon who knows my eye literally inside out so well. Mm-hmm. And so I'm fortunate in that sense. But I was very ready to take exactly that advice and just move on, you know. And Kevin, you've been pretty lucky too. I mean, all the people we know in your world who have gone through, the process of helping you recover and worked with you have been really amazing people, I think, for the most part.
Well, it didn't start that way.
Yeah.
A lot of that has to do with advocating for yourself and asking, you know, endless questions. But clarifying what's going on, what's happening with my brain. Like one of the things that really, really was hard for me is that I was treated like I was brain damaged or something. And, no laugh. Come on. A little chuckle. Yeah. Nothing. And so it was like, I kind of felt like I was being treated like, oh, you wouldn't understand, you know?
Right.
And and I was like, oh, I'll understand. Like, my brain screwed up. I'm going to figure out my brain, you know?
Right.
And actually, I presented for Nora a couple of years ago, and Dr. Denise Smith, my optometrist, came on stage, and she said, what did she say? She said, I feel like a proud mother up here, and I just want to thank Kevin for asking me all the hard questions and really clarifying what's going on, and he made me a better doctor for it.
Yeah, I remember.
And that touched my heart so much. That meant so much.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way with my eye doctor too. Like, I mean, she spent 2 days with me, an hour and a half each day. That's a lot for an eye doctor.
Yeah.
Nice.
And she's like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. She's like, we need to figure out what's going on. And she went home the night in between and pulled out her neurology books to look up those cranial nerves you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I mean, now the next time she has a concussion patient come in complaining about how their eye feels funny, she's gonna know the right questions to ask next time. So yeah, that's really great. Awesome.
Yeah,
that's really
cool. And Al, when you were talking about Dr. Empathy, sorry, that sounds like a name. Dr. Empathy
would be a superhero in my book. Yeah.
Superhero Dr. Empathy.
That's gonna be my superhero.
It's like a cape with a heart on it or something.
Yeah, there you go. With like an anatomically correct heart.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just thinking, Andrea Nakayama, who I'm working for now. She actually is developing a practitioner mastery matrix, in which she really talks about the empathy piece, of that's actually the first, pedal framework. I'm not sure what we're calling it yet. Empathy is huge.
So and it just starts with empathy is what you're saying.
It starts with empathy.
Yeah.
Starts with empathy, ends with mastery.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's run with empathy if we can, because I want to get to, before time runs too long here, some of your articles, Amy, because and you know, we covered one of these when we talked about awareness in our last episode. But like I said in the beginning too, I just feel you have this great capacity to write from a point of empathy, where you want to sort of translate what it is to live with a traumatic brain injury to other people who don't understand it. And the article that we referenced in the last episode was 10 ways you can help a loved one cope with their traumatic brain injury. And you said, you know, every single brain injury is unique and will not only take different recovery times, but will also present different symptoms depending on where the brain was injured. That's something that we wish more people understood, of course.
Yeah.
And we talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. But the most recent article, let me just list another one too. You also wrote 5 things every TBI survivor wants to understand. And a lot of these, of course, people can read in your book, which I sincerely hope that they go out and check out. And the newest one, which I think is just perfect timing for this episode, is Life with a TBI, 6 Tips for Surviving the Holidays and Overstimulation. And so you talk about overstimulation. This, again, I'm not a TBI survivor. I'm, you know, sort of in the layman chair. But I really understood this from a personal standpoint because mm-hmm. I have a very sensitive brain. I have really sensitive eyes, too, obviously, from
I can imagine,
the
yeah.
things right. I've gone through. And I think, you know, any of us, you know, a feature of the way that you write these articles is you clarify that you're saying this isn't just an all or nothing case, right? I mean, suffering a concussion is not no big deal, and suffering a brain injury is not comatose or vegetative state.
Right.
There is a huge spectrum, and everything is unique, and people go through things. But what I love about the tone of your writing in these articles is you're saying, you know, really connect with the person and figure out what they're going through and understand that some things, like you're saying, that we take for granted or the things that stimulate us every day are just a little bit more impactful. You know, you get fatigued. You need to keep hydrated. So will you tell us a little bit about how you got into writing these articles and then just, you know, comment on this newest article and how you came to the information for this one?
Yeah, you know, at about my 1 year mark, I think it was exactly my 1 year mark, I was like, okay, I need to just get some of this off my chest because, you know, I hadn't talked much about what I was going through because people just kind of brushed it off. It's mm-hmm. just a concussion. So I actually wrote my first piece, which was called Life with a Traumatic Brain Injury. And I wrote it on my own personal blog. And my girlfriend was like, you should really submit that to Huffington Post. That's a really good article. And I was just like, okay, yeah, sure. So I did. And they approved it within like 2 hours and got me set up with an account with HuffPost.
Wow.
And that first, I was actually traveling when it went live. I was in, I think I was in Texas. And it was just unbelievable. I mean, it was like, it had 500 likes, then 1,000, then 5,000, wow. then 10,000. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And my girlfriend was watching it. And she's like, this is so cool, Amy. She's like, this is just really awesome. And I had people writing me, emailing me, Facebooking me, saying how I put into words how they felt and that this could have been their story. Like, that's how touched they were by it. And that's when I knew I was on to something. I'm like, okay, I can use my words to help others. And then that five things every TBI survivor wants you to understand, that's probably my second most liked article. That one went pretty, I think that one's up to like 30,000 likes as mm-hmm. well. This current one, six tips for surviving the holidays and overstimulation. I actually, when I'm overstimulated, I can't sleep. And I was lying in bed and I'm like, ooh, this would be a great article. And so I literally got up at like 2 a.m. to write this, because if I didn't, I would completely forget everything I had in my head.
Sure.
But I'm like, this is a really good one, because the holidays can be really hard on people in general without a brain injury.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this out there. It's simple things you can do to keep yourself feeling healthy. And then it also helps other people understand what you're going through so that they can help you. You know what I mean? So, you know, like keeping hydrated, getting additional rest. You know, like I have to go take a nap. Every day I take a nap. And, you know, if you can't get your nap in when you're at Aunt Bethany's house for Christmas, you're going to really fade. And, you know, if you do go take that nap, people will be like, oh, why is she taking a nap? This is why I'm taking a nap, you know? That's why I wanted to write this article.
Right. Yeah. Hydration is a huge piece. I got a water bottle. That's like my binky. I carried everywhere.
Yes, me too.
It's like a no spill water bottle. I love it to death. And so, you know, the last thing you have there, ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I definitely need to get better at.
It's hard.
It is hard. It's
you
hard.
You don't
want to
seem like you need help, but you do.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. It's like, it's hard to feel or to, you don't want to be needy. But you could certainly use some assistance with things, and I think the way I usually ask for help is like, hey, let's go do this. It'll be fun, you know. And then it is, you know, so it all works out. But I really appreciated that article. I do not take a nap. I can't nap in the middle of the day. Can't do it. But I totally understand how others need that.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, like we said, every brain injury is different. And concussion is certainly a type of brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited your book is coming out. It's very timely. With all of the attention that concussions are getting in general with the movie coming out.
Yes, I'm excited.
On Christmas. I'm excited. Dude, Will Smith kills it with that accent.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
Well, on the ask for help point too, you know, Kevin and I talk about dealing with perception quite a bit. And I want to ask you, you know, how do you deal with perception in terms of I mean, it seems like we speak to, you know, a good amount of TBI survivors who, you know, really fit anywhere on the spectrum of, look, I want to be anonymous. I don't want anybody to know I've gone through this.
Yeah.
Versus, I want to be really open with you and communicate to you what I go through, because then you'll understand me better. And then I don't feel as much pressure, you know? And I just, I'm curious because you're very open about what you've gone through, what you deal with every day. And I think that's a really, you know, I sort of exist on the spectrum where I think that's a really healthy thing. I kind of like, a quote from, it's not the greatest reference, but Game of Thrones, and Tyrion talks about wearing it like an armor. You know, if you can be open about yourself and not give people ammunition, you can just wear it like an armor and kind of walk by. So how do you deal with that, at being so open about this?
You know, I feel like the more authentic you come across, the more people will listen. And you know, obviously I've connected with a ton of survivors. Like, they can totally relate to what I'm writing to. But then caregivers are also writing me and reaching out to me because what I write has helped them understand what their husband, daughter, son is going through. And I feel if I wrote this anonymously or from a point of view that I hadn't been through it, it wouldn't have the same effect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think authenticity is the point there too. I mean, I think that sometimes Kevin and I will have a conversation about, you know, is there a negative return from, you know, the investment of being just open about what you can or can't do, or the fact that you are brand. If you work in a, you know, if you work somewhere and you work with colleagues, you work with people, is it in your interest to tell them, you know, ooh, you know, sometimes I just forget things. Does that go for you or does that go against you? And
right.
And I really appreciate your posture of leaning forward and being authentic about it. And because I think that takes courage. And I think it's a great example that being that way and being open, honesty is always a good thing, in my opinion. And, you know, if people don't like you for who you are and for what you go through,
right,
that's their problem, you know?
Exactly.
You know, coming off of what you're saying there, with the honesty is always good, but the perception of that, sometimes what you're expressing isn't communicated or received in the way that you mean to express it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's that double-edged sword that we were talking about earlier, where it's like, yeah, I have trouble with this. And then they're like, oh, well, that person can't handle that, you know, like don't even, you know, you can't count on them to do anything, sort of. I mean, I'm blowing this out of proportion, but it's a double-edged sword of like you say, yeah, I have a little, I have trouble doing this, and it's like, and it can be like, oh, you know, can't do that, you know, and so it's an interesting balance, and also it's really important to communicate as effectively as possible, which, as you can likely tell, I struggle with, you know. I take my time to pick out the words, and sometimes I can't find the words. They're somewhere in there, but I'm like, it takes me forever to figure them out, you know, and sort them out and put them on paper or spit them out of my mouth, you know. In saying that, should I not do a podcast or be in a radio setting? Like, no, that's not the case at all.
Right.
But it's hard to communicate these nuances and the double-edged nature of things.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think it's difficult to pierce prejudices. You know, it's difficult. Like, you talk about people who mistake you for intoxicated, or who feel like you just come off to them as very different, or something's weirder. And it's not often, but when it happens, I just think that's insane. Because, you know, while you might experience some internal feeling about talking slower or not finding the words, I can't see that at all, you know. And maybe that's because we know each other so well and we work together every day on this stuff. But I can imagine from your perspective, it has to be difficult sometimes.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another thing. I hear that a lot. Like, man, you know, I don't see that at all. And I'm like, well, I know it's there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, you said something I think it was the Double Vision article, and I'm not sure if this relates very well, but at the end of the Double Vision article, you say if you feel like something's off, trust your gut and go with that and get to the bottom of it, you know? And so, and that's definitely how I've approached my recovery as well. Like, follow through and find I have a buddy at the Mary Lee Foundation. He said, yeah, we're going to sift the sand out. And I like that analogy. But just finding the problem areas and tackling them, in everything, despite whatever others tell you, you know, especially when they're like, you're fine.
Yeah.
And you know it's not the case.
Yeah.
You can improve.
Yeah, I think that's well said.
I agree.
Well, this has been just an absolute joy to have you on with us, Amy. Thank you so much. For those of you listening, you can find her website at facesoftbi.com. Her blog is great, and she does her own podcast series. You can donate. You can see all that she's been up to, and she's really got a great, as she puts it, loud and proud voice for TBI. And
yep.
And check out her book. The book is available through her website or on Amazon, Life with a Traumatic Brain Injury, Finding the Road Back to Normal. Really, really great. Thanks so much for being on with us.
Yeah, thank you guys. This has been a lot of fun, and I appreciate you both having me here. It's been really great chatting with you guys.
Yeah, we're gonna have to have you back if that's okay at some point.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Because you're doing so much, and it's just like, I feel like, you know, I talked to you maybe a month ago, and I already want to catch up for everything that's happened last month. So I know that in a week from now, I'm gonna be like, oh, I've got to ask her about that. So.
Absolutely.
It's been great.
All right, Amy.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's stay in touch. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
You can find show notes for this episode at the website adventuresandbraininjury.com/podcasts, where we'll include links and information that we mentioned from this episode, and where we also invite you to leave a comment if you have a question for us or a suggestion. Come on by and let us know. You can also mail us at podcast@adventuresandbraininjury.com. And we want to thank those of you who support our show through our Patreon page. If you find value in the show and the work that Kevin and I do, we invite you to come by adventuresandbraininjury.com/support. Your support really makes this show happen and keeps us going, and we can't thank you enough for that. And from Kevin and Amy and I, thanks everybody for tuning into this one, and have a fun and safe holiday season. Take care. Take me.